Hi there, and welcome to Magic Time, the off-season edition, another off-season edition. Scott Squires with you, chatting as usual with the head coach of the Moncton Magic, Joe Salerno. And Coach, we're past the midway park mark now of July. How are things overall with you, with your summer and everything that's been going on the last few weeks?
Yeah, hey, Scott. It's good, and it's flying by, right? The summer's just kind of cruising by, which isn't a bad thing, you know, when you're into basketball so much, you're looking forward to the winter getting here. But things are going well. It's been a really, really busy month of July, and you know, kind of just working every day, looking forward to next season.
It has been a busy month of July. I mean, checking out some of the things that you've been posting on your social media, Instagram in particular. We'll get into talking about what it was like during your time in Las Vegas in particular. But the last time we spoke, you were in Raleigh. Now I got to ask you, because you're obviously an American from stateside. Does it matter? Is it Raleigh or Raleigh?
Oh, it's Raleigh. Yeah, definitely Raleigh. I haven't heard anybody pronounce it Raleigh before, so I go with Raleigh, North Carolina.
See, I always have to find out. So it's not a potato-potato thing. It's definitely Raleigh. So from the last time we spoke to you when you were heading down to the Combine in Raleigh, what's the last couple of weeks been like? What are a couple of highlights in particular from your time in Las Vegas?
Well, it's like I said, it's been very busy. You know, Las Vegas certainly is the kind of busiest, you know, place when it comes to basketball, you know, in the off season, when you're talking about recruiting new players and networking and meeting with players and agents and coaches. You know, Las Vegas this year, I was there for about 6 days and attended numerous events. I probably went to 5 or 6 different exposure camps, combines, you know, also went to NBA Summer League, met with a ton of people and a ton of agents. And, you know, it was just a bit of a whirlwind. You know, it always is, because you're just on the move constantly while you're out there, you know, in the 105 degree Fahrenheit weather. But now, you know, that I'm back in the office, you're kind of sifting through everything, all the people you met, all the players you saw, and you're really starting to identify players of interest and starting to get in contact with those players and their agents and speaking with them. So Las Vegas was busy as always, yet I think it was productive.
So we'll talk about a couple of the stops in particular, because I know it was a real whirlwind and you were quite busy. Maybe just a couple of thoughts and a couple of takeaways from your visit with the Vegas Pro Summer League.
Yeah, the VPA, or the Vegas Pro Summer League, I mean, it was a great event. You know, the VPA event is actually run by a guy named Michael Stinnett, who's basically an agent slash coach. He runs a great pro-am in Kentucky. KPA actually stands for Kentucky Pro-Am, but they also now have a KPA Summer League. And that was held actually at the Las Vegas Convention Center, which is an incredible facility. It's just absolutely massive convention center, but they actually lay out about, I think there was 22 basketball floors in one room, if you can try to fathom or picture that. And, you know, they hold a great event with a lot of talent. And, you know, came away with 2 or 3 players from that single event, you know, that we're kind of following up on and researching now.
And then another event that you attended was the McNeil Hoop Summit. What exactly is that, and what were some takeaways from that?
Yeah, so the McNeil Hoop Summit is actually an event that I've been attending, or actually even coaching at, the last several years. That's a sports agency based out of Fort Worth, Texas. They do a lot of business in the Dallas and Houston area. I found a few players. Actually, Wayne McCullough. Wayne McCullough came from the McNeil Exposure Camp in Houston a few years ago. That's actually an event that I coached at. Actually, Nelson Taroba from the St. John Riptide was also coaching at that event this year. And actually, really, really cool, quick story about that event, Scott. That was actually held at a facility called Phase One Sports in Las Vegas, which is a very, very high-end training facility for professional athletes. And my first day at the camp, I just got done coaching a game, and I was actually walking back out to my car to get my now 100 degree bottle of water that I left in my car. But I opened the door to the outside of the parking lot and literally ran into Giannis Antetokounmpo, the NBA MVP, literally opened the door, almost bumping right into his shoulder. He was entering the facility as I was exiting the facility. And it just took me by such surprise. You know, I'm normally not one who gets a little starstruck or asks for photos or selfies, but I certainly should have there. That would have been a first for me with an NBA MVP. But that was pretty cool. That was really cool kind of running into him. But it was a good event. It's always a good event with McNeil. And, you know, it was fun. It was fun coaching some young, hungry guys.
Now, Coach, you never know who you're going to run into. In your travels and adventures, it always seems that there's kind of an anecdote or a story like that pops up. So, you said you kind of bumped into him. Was it like a super brief, quick second meeting? I know it wasn't a meeting as such. But
I didn't even say anything to him, Scott. It was literally, I opened the door and started turning to my left, and he was entering the door kind of head on. And, again, it happened so quickly. I kind of just said, wait a second, that was the MVP. that was Giannis, you know, go back and ask for a photo. And, you know, by that time he had already entered the facility. He was actually there working out. A lot of the Milwaukee Bucks was there, actually NBA All-Star Chris Middleton. He was also, there at the facility working out. So, it was cool. You know, on my way back into the gym, I actually stopped and I watched him work out for about 5 minutes. They were doing a lot of agility and strength training, and, so yeah, it was cool. He's a large individual, very, very young, large, long athlete. So it was really kind of a cool, quick experience.
Now we'll stay on that for just one quick sec, because you said you watched him work out for a little bit. Now, obviously, he's an elite level, world class basketball player, as you mentioned, the reigning MVP. And as a coach and as an evaluator of talent, Coach, what is it about him that sticks out other than things you mentioned? You know, he's young, he's athletic, he's long. But when you watched him, what were a couple of things that really stood out to you that you're looking at him going like, yeah, I mean, good grief, no wonder he's an elite?
Well, like I said, I mean, his length is incredible. I mean, I don't know exactly what his wingspan is, but I would have to guess it's around 7'5", 7'8" would be my guess. So just an incredible specimen when you're talking about an athlete. But then, you know, it blows me away. I mean, his work ethic. I mean, this is a guy who just won the MVP, you know, of the best basketball league in the world. And it's 10 a.m. in Las Vegas in the middle of July, and he's absolutely getting after it, you know, in the gym, lifting. And it's cool. You almost wish so many young players could see what these multi-million dollar athletes do on a daily basis and the work that they continue to put in. So really incredible, really just kind of in awe of his work ethic, watching him for 5-10 minutes in the gym.
Yeah, that's really cool for sure. Another event that you were part of, and actually you were one of the folks that addressed and spoke at this event, was the Sharks Sports Overseas Basketball Combine. Again, what can you tell us about exactly what that event is and how you became involved?
Yeah, so that's just another exposure camp that's put on by a sports agency. Shark Sports Management is actually run by a guy named Joe Dinda, who I've known for quite a few years now. You know, and he had asked me to come and make an appearance at his camp and obviously scout it, coach at it, and be a guest speaker at it. And you know, that morning they have a very nice kind of orientation and really kind of an educational session for these players about, you know, what it's like trying to sign your first contract and what comes with that and what happens when you go overseas. And just extremely well done, very professional. You know, I was fortunate enough to speak at it, and I was actually one guest speaker among coaches from Serbia, Spain, Lithuania. There was a coach from Luxembourg there. There was a coach from Poland. So just really kind of a great experience listening to these other pro coaches, you know, what their messages were to players. And then of course, you know, my message to players and, you know, it's just a you know, I'm very fortunate to be put in those positions, you know, where you can hear from other professionals and at the same time, you know, speak to players, young players, and kind of give them advice and some tips. So just a great event and one, again, I was very proud and happy to speak at.
And it's interesting, you know, you talked about all the coaches from the different countries. We've talked about how big the game of basketball is globally. But how do you see the growth of the game internationally in terms of how you might start to see maybe some international players even filtering down into the National Basketball League of Canada one day?
Yeah, well, I mean, basketball has always been very big in Europe. And I think what people have seen over the last decade or two is the caliber of player and the talent level getting better and better every year. And, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with the connection between the United States and Europe and a lot of things the NBA are doing. And you see so many more American coaches coaching abroad and kind of bringing their knowledge and really kind of combining it with the knowledge that was currently already there in the European markets or South America, wherever it may be. So, you know, from what I'm seeing, it's just the level of play, the caliber of player coming from Europe is just continuing to get better every year. I mean, you're seeing that in Canada with more players going in the NBA draft and more players playing in the NCAA Division I. So, you know, it's just basketball is continuing to grow. I think people would find a hard argument, you know, saying that the NBA probably isn't the best professional league in the world right now as far as their popularity, probably their financial status and kind of how they handle their league. So it's just, again, man, it's a growing sport across the world and kind of globally. And it's cool to be part of that. So, yeah, it's a lot of good. And as far as, you know, players from Europe coming into the NBL Canada, I think you could certainly start seeing that a little more often. I know last year, you know, the Magic, we had four or five different players from Europe kind of on our radar. You know, this year, actually, currently, we're looking at a player from Japan. So it's, it's really interesting stuff.
Now, you have spent, obviously, the last couple of weeks scouting, looking, evaluating, whatever the case may be. And I'm sure, as we've talked before, that you've got agents contacting you as well. Obviously, we've talked before again about, you know, you'd love to be able to bring the crew back from last year. You know, the kind of the buzz term these days is run it back, you know, bring the guys back and try to do it again. But right now, what is the kind of roster of players that you've got to look at? Like, are you looking at right now 40, 50, 60 potentially as a pool of players? You know, roughly how many legit players do you have to go through right now to kind of whittle it down?
Well, I think when you combine last year's players, because again, you know, we're very interested in bringing a large portion of those players back. I think when you take the 12 players from last year's roster and you add that to our kind of new prospect depth chart, you know, we're probably right around 30, 35 players right now that we're looking at, maybe closer to 40, you know, and I do have another event coming up early August in Florida that we'll have 100 to 200 players at. So, you know, it's starting to grow. The board is starting to grow in my office as it normally does in July. But, you know, I'm really hoping, you know, a board that normally has 60 to 70 to 80 players on it, you know, stays around that 50 player or so mark. And because we have, you know, we're confident that we're going to have a lot of players returning. So we'll see. This summer has a little bit of a different feel to it when it comes to player recruiting. And I think just a large part of that is because we'd like to have so many returning players.
And it's interesting, you know, we mentioned when we did a podcast just after you won the championship and we were talking about the offseason and, you know, we discussed potentially how many more doors it may open for the Moncton Magic and for you in terms of player recruitment by being the champs. As now we've got a little bit of separation between when you won the championship and where we are now, a couple of months have passed. How big a difference are you seeing in doors opening or maybe being reached out to by agents and players that you may not have expected to be just because you have that mantle of the champs?
Quite a bit. quite a bit. I mean, certainly this year in Las Vegas was different. You know, I've been out there for quite a few years now. So you've gotten to know an awful lot of people. And I always say that's kind of where you grow your network the most in the summer is Las Vegas. And, you know, for me, it was just certainly a lot more people kind of recognizing the logo on the shirts, you know, recognizing that we'd won a championship in the NBL this year. And certainly a lot of congratulations. And, you know, I definitely felt like the Magic presence was certainly larger in Las Vegas than it had been the year before. And I think a lot of that was attributed to winning the title this year. So it's been good. I think, again, it comes with instant credibility from players, you know, new players that follow the league. You know, they certainly knew that we had won a title this year, and players want to be part of winning programs and organizations. So it has had its benefits, no question.
And you mentioned logo on the shirt being recognized. A really cool picture that I saw was talking about some of the guys from the championship squad, Freddie McSwain Jr. He was running a camp and taking part in one. He was repping the Moncton Magic colors. What does that mean to you? And I know that you had a chance to see Freddie down in Vegas. So what was that like?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's great when you see your players, you know, repping Magic apparel. And I mean, they're proud of what they did this season. And, you know, it was great seeing Freddie in Las Vegas. Freddie actually participated in the Eurobasket camp in Las Vegas, which had close, I think, to about 150 players in it. And you know, all these camps have a rating system for the players, you know, based on their play at the camp. And I actually just saw yesterday those final ratings came out for Eurobasket, and Freddie was ranked number 6 in the entire camp as far as production. At his camp, he had a tremendous camp, and you know, I had the chance to sit with Freddie and his agent at dinner one night at Aria, which is right on the Strip in Las Vegas, and it was great, man. It was great catching up with him and just seeing him do so well, and you know, there really was a tight knit feeling. I think, you know, after you win that championship, guys, just you formed a bond, and you can certainly feel that. So. It was great. It was great seeing Freddie. And unfortunately, you know, Billy White, who lives in Las Vegas, was in San Diego at the time I was there. So I wasn't able to catch up with Billy. But Freddie was doing well and playing well. And, you know, him, myself, and his agent had a very productive conversation and a nice dinner. Actually, Matty Robertson was at that dinner with us as well. He was out in Las Vegas. So, no, it was great.
And I see that Freddie McSwain Jr., Flight 35, as I affectionately referred to him as on the broadcast, he's taken it to another level now, Coach. He's got his own logo. Have you had a chance to see that yet?
You know, I saw that. I saw the logo, and I got to ask Freddie about that. I got to say, what's the story? What's the story? Do I need a logo? Like, should I get a logo, Freddie? You know, Coach Salerno logo? I don't know. It looks sharp. You know, I'm sure he's pretty proud of it. So, you know, maybe Freddie has some plans. Maybe he has some big plans for some apparel or branding. I'm not sure, but he's a great kid, and I truly enjoy Freddie. And, you know, I thought the logo looked sharp.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And listen, you know, now more than ever, athletes have got to think about being business savvy and entrepreneurial as well. So as you said, we'll have to see. Maybe if he's got some apparel and some swag coming out, maybe we can angle Freddie to get us some of that Freddie McSwain logoed swag. What do you think?
Yeah, I want a Freddie McSwain hat or shirt. Like, I want some gear, Freddie. You know, Freddie's got to take care of me. So I'll let him know. I'll start repping the Freddie McSwain brand here in New Brunswick.
To put a little bow on things now with this conversation in terms of, you know, the different camps that you've been to, some of the players you've looked at, where things have gone with negotiating with guys that are coming back, like a Corey Almond, who we mentioned on a previous podcast, has another year left on his deal. But in terms of your checklist and your blueprint of where you wanted to be at this point in the offseason, you know, how comfortable and how happy are you with where things are right now in terms of all the things that you had to do in the off season as we record this on the 18th of July?
Yeah, I think we're at a pretty good place. I think, you know, I've been able to stay in close contact with a lot of our guys You know, I speak to at least 3 to 4 of them, you know, once a week type thing. And I think we're in a good spot where, you know, now we recognize and we have found some new talent. We have a pretty good idea of players we feel we're certainly going to have back next season. You know, we also have an idea of some of our players that may be moving on. So now it's kind of filling those holes. You know, you're starting to do that a little bit. And also, you know, the next 2 weeks, we'll really start kind of looking to get guys signed and getting pen to paper. And, you know, we'll start that, you know, with returning guys. You know, we just want to get our foundation under contract and then kind of fill the holes and plug in the pieces that we feel we need. So I think we're on track. You know, I just look forward to getting some contracts done and getting them turned into the league and just knowing exactly, you know, who we have coming back for certain. So it's all a progression. You know, in the summer, you kind of have to do one thing before you do the next. And, you know, but we're heading in the right direction. So I'm pretty happy where we're at.
Besides some of the things that you just mentioned, I know you mentioned you've got another camp coming up in Florida in August, but what are a couple of other really big agenda items for you and the organization over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I mean, for us, I mean, right now, again, it's starting to get players signed, especially returning guys, you know, and that's kind of the first item right now, as well as following up and really researching and doing our homework on the players that we have interest in, you know, certainly that we saw in Las Vegas. And, you know, I've pretty much been on my phone nonstop since I got back from Las Vegas, you know, speaking with players that we like, speaking with their agents, at the same time following up with returning guys. So that's really kind of what's going on right now. We have obviously our youth camp, which is coming up in August, which is just massive. We've completely sold it out. I believe we have 101 campers, which is really, it's double our size from last year, you know, and we've moved into a new facility that has 2 full courts this year. But that's a big project. You know, when you talk about having 101 9 to 15-year-olds for a week, it's a big project when you're talking about staff and preparation for the camp. So, you know, myself and Kent Wallace have been kind of working diligently on that and just getting our staff confirmed. You know, it looks like we'll have Brad States will be working camp, and Denzel Taylor, and a pretty good chance Nick Evans, possibly Gentry Thomas. So that's on the to-do list, so to speak, right now. And then it's really kind of, you know, looking at our preseason a little bit and just kind of right now getting a head start on the 2019-20 season.
Yeah, and it's going to be here before you know it. And speaking of the 2019-2020 season, gosh, I almost had to stop for a second when I went to say 2020. I'm like, is that right? But my gosh, the next year will be 2020. Oh my goodness, coach, I feel old. But anyway, speaking of that schedule, and I know that it's nothing that is anything to do with the Moncton Magic organization directly. However, it will affect the team and the league, and that was the unfortunate announcement recently that the Cape Breton Highlanders are taking a step back, at least for the immediate future, and will not be a part of the upcoming season. Obviously, I know that you can't comment on exactly what went on because you wouldn't know. It's a Cape Breton thing. But do you know how that may affect the schedule and how that may affect the organization from the standpoint of one less team, travel, whatever?
Well, I don't know exactly how it's going to affect things. I mean, obviously, anytime I think the league, you know, loses one of its teams, there certainly will be a domino effect, whether it be schedule and travel and, you know, just kind of structure, you know, when it comes to the league playing games, et cetera. You know, at the same time, this isn't the first time that it's happened in this league. You know, there's been other teams, Ottawa, Montreal, you know, Quebec, going way back, where teams just haven't quite made it. And, you know, again, it's unfortunate because I know a lot of people in Cape Breton were very passionate about the Highlanders. You know, I'm good friends personally with Tyrone Levinston, and obviously you want to see everybody do well when it comes to the NBL Canada. I mean, me personally, I'm a huge supporter of this league, and I have been for a long time. So that's tough to see, but you know, at the same time, you know, we want to see the league move forward. You know, we certainly want to make sure that, or again, my own personal opinion is, you want to have strong organizations and franchises in this league, and I think that's the only way that it continues to grow and get better every year. So, you know, if that happens to mean, you know, losing a team here or there, as unfortunate as it is, you know, that might open a window for another franchise to come in. So, again, it's too bad. I hate to see it. You know, we had some great games with Cape Breton over the years. You know, I just hope that moving forward, the league is able to fill that hole with an even stronger organization, and you know, just look for again, a stronger league as a whole.
And I certainly don't want to get you in trouble for any potential tampering. I don't know exactly what the league rules are and what's going to happen, but the natural progression of thought for me is that, okay, Cape Breton will not be in the league this coming season. They would have had a number of players that were on their roster that may have been coming back, some very good, talented players. Do you know, will these players go back into the pool of availability for Cape Breton? Have any of those guys been on your radar that you can comment about? Like I said, I don't want to get you in trouble, coach, but you know, if you can comment on that at all, you know, we'll take it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm not, you know, I obviously don't know. I don't know what the league will decide to do when it comes to Cape Breton's player protected list. You know, I know in years past in other leagues and just with experience, you know, really one of a couple things could happen. One, those players may be they may be designated to a possible new franchise, you know, if that's in the works, and I don't know if that is. I know that happened with Niagara and Sudbury. You know, the Sudbury being a new team, they kind of took over the rights of those players that were protected by Niagara. So, I mean, that I guess might be a possibility. I've seen dispersal drafts before where those players would basically go into basically a draft type pool for other teams that are currently in the NBL. And I think there's also the possibility of those players all just becoming free agents and other teams having the possibility to sign those guys. So, I'm not sure what the league will decide to do. I'm sure we'll find out soon. Because obviously you want to give those players the opportunity to play in our league again. You know, Cape Breton had some really talented guys, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And something else I wanted to get in real quick. It's not related to Moncton, but it is related to basketball, and indirectly, I guess, related to Moncton because Gentry Thomas is from the Preston area. You had Terry Thomas, who was from there as well. East Preston, North Preston produced so many great basketball players. But a really cool thing is happening in North Preston on this Saturday. And again, I don't know if you saw it on social media, coach, but I saw a tweet from Shaq Smith. And there's a big grand opening for the North Preston Community Center basketball court. And it's this Saturday at 6 p.m. local time, 44 Simmons Road in North Preston. So if you happen to be listening to this and you're going to be in that area, go out and check it out. And coach, check out this because I retweeted it on my Twitter account. But this court in North Preston, this outdoor court, it is, man, oh man, it is amazing. And I think it's really awesome for that community. So many great basketball players come from there. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Shaq Smith and to all the folks who have worked so hard over the last couple of years to get that North Preston Community Center basketball court. But again, just something great at the grassroots level, coach, to get more people playing basketball.
Yeah, it really is. I saw a photo myself on social media of that court in North Preston, and you're right, it is extremely impressive. That's an incredible community down there. I went to a pro-am tournament in East Preston a couple years ago, and was just kind of blown away by the community, and you know, they just seem like it's such a tight-knit group, and they've had some tremendous basketball players come from that area, as you mentioned. Gentry Thomas, Terry Thomas, Chris Johnson is from that area. You know, Marquise Clayton, a guy from Halifax. I don't think East Preston, but Halifax, you know, that we also had signed. Tyler Scott is from the Halifax area. Wendell Wigginton, right? I mean, there's a ton of guys from that area. And Halifax in the Preston area is definitely a community and an area that I scout and I recruit. And, you know, I have, to be honest with you, almost found more talent in that area than even the Toronto area. It's obviously just smaller, and there's not quite as many players. But the guys who come out of that area, they're usually pretty tough guys. They're competitors, and I'm a big fan. So I'm thrilled to see a new court open there, and I think it's just only going to help basketball in that area. So yeah, really, really cool tweet, and I'm actually going to be heading down that way in late August for the Halifax the Peace Tournament, which is a pro-am tournament that I look forward to going to every year. So no, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it is really cool. And again, just for anybody that's listening, it's going to be in the area this Saturday, July 20th, 6 p.m., 44 Simmons Road in North Preston, the official opening of the North Preston Community Center basketball court as part of the North Preston Days celebration. All right, Coach, we'll go on from basketball now, and we'll spend the last couple minutes, as I like to do, catching up. I'm almost like an ipso facto member of the Salerno family, or at least that's what I tell myself. My last name is Esquire, so it's an S, Squire, Salerno, close enough. Let's talk about some of the adventures of the Salerno family over the last couple of weeks, because yes, you were working hard and you had your basketball side on, but you also had the family hat on. One of the things I want to talk about is, because I was at a 4th of July fireworks in the United States a number of years ago, and man, oh man, best fireworks I ever saw were 4th of July fireworks. Where were you for the fireworks?
Yeah, so we were actually in New Hampshire, Jeffersonville, New Hampshire, for the fireworks on the 4th of July. That's a town about probably an hour and 40 minutes from where I grew up. But we actually went to a theme park that day, kind of on our way down to the United States. Myself, Darcy, Cam, and Alex, and we went to Santa's Village theme park all day, which was a blast, and then took in some fireworks that evening in Jeffersonville, and it was awesome. And the fireworks, you know, like you said, there are no other fireworks like 4th of July fireworks in the United States, and for such a small town, it was extremely impressive. The fireworks went on for probably 45 minutes to an hour, and it was great. It was a great time.
45 minutes to an hour? Really?
Yeah, yeah. And we're talking about a town that may be maybe the size of Truro, if not smaller. And, you know, it was, but that's how they do it. You know, that's how it was so long. I mean, Alex was like falling asleep on my shoulder and I'm trying to wake her up for like the grand finale. And it was just, you know, but it was awesome. I mean, that's kind of what the 4th of July is about in the United States. It's being with your family and, you know, a lot of the small towns in the States, they just celebrate big. So it was an awesome 4th of July this year in New Hampshire.
Very cool indeed. Something else that was really neat, I saw a picture that you put on social media. Really cool picture, four generations playing golf. What was that day like? Where did you play and who won?
That was a lot of fun that day. That was actually, that was at Montpelier Country Club, Montpelier Oaks Club in Montpelier, Vermont. And that's actually the course that I grew up playing on. And my grandfather has won the club championship there 13 times. And my father, I think, has won it 6 times. And that's a really special place to me. It's just a small little course, but it's where I grew up learning how to play the game. And, you know, every summer I look forward to going back there and playing, and it was fun. You know, it was myself, Camden and Darcy against it was myself, Darcy, and Alex against Camden, my grandfather, and my father in a scramble format. And, we lost by a stroke. So it was a little tough to take, but, really, really special, you know, seeing my grandfather play. He played a couple holes. You know, he's, you know, 90 years old now, and really will probably only play once or twice this summer, and that was one of the times. So really, really cool experience, and probably one of my favorite days of the vacation.
And I can tell you something, that picture, the four-generation Salerno picture, precious indeed. Now, you had lots of fun as the family, you know, with the kids involved, 4th of July, Santa's Village, you know, the golf game that we just talked about. But mom and dad, Salerno, Joe and Darcy, had a little fun. What can you tell me about Aerosmith?
Yeah, we did have some fun. Darcy actually, she made the trip out to Las Vegas with me just for the first couple of nights. I think I was there for 6 nights, and Darcy was there for the first three. It was great. I mean, it's not too often, you know, we get to just spend some time with each other. You know, living up here in Canada, you know, and not really having many family around to look after the kids. But yeah, the kids went camping with my mother in Vermont for a few days, and Darcy came out to Vegas. Granted, I was pretty busy all day, most days. You know, she didn't have a big problem spending time by the pool while I was at work, but then it certainly opened up some time in the evenings. And Aerosmith was, we went and saw Aerosmith at MGM Park, and it was kind of a bucket list item for my wife. So incredible show. I was shocked by how good Steven Tyler was, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And again, we don't get to do stuff like that too often. So it was a pretty cool night.
Now, you mentioned Steven Tyler, probably the greatest front man that I've ever seen at the greatest concert I've ever seen was a number of years ago. It was actually at Magnetic Hill in Moncton. It was the U2 final show of their 360 World Tour, and Bono absolutely blew my mind. I still haven't seen a better frontman, but I think you and I were talking before we started doing this podcast live. You were telling me that Steven Tyler, and you just referenced it a little bit, but I guess he could give a run for the money for the best frontman in the world, perhaps?
I can't get over, Scott. He's 71 years old, and for 2.5 hours on stage, he looked like he was 21. I mean, I don't know how he does it. I mean, I have an idea, but he was just... incredible energy, incredible show. They played all their greatest hits, and he just brings an electric presence to the stage. And like I said, you know, it's pretty rare we kind of splurge and do something like that, but you know, we had great seats, and really was an incredible experience. So I'm an Aerosmith fan. Like, I'm now an Aerosmith fan. My wife was really kind of the bigger Aerosmith fan of the two of us, but after seeing them live, you can't not love them. You cannot respect what they do and the show they put on. So definitely a highlight of the trip, no question.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I know another highlight in the last couple of weeks for your wife, Darcy, was Team USA winning the Women's FIFA World Cup. I know she's a huge soccer player in her day and a big fan of soccer. And of course, for Team USA, has she come down off the high of Team USA winning yet?
Yeah, man, she was fired up. It was cool because the game started at 8 a.m. In Las Vegas, and my first event wasn't until 10 a.m. that morning, and you know, so it was cool. We got to go down. We actually got breakfast kind of to go, and we sat at a sports book at the Mirage and watched the game with probably 70, 80 other USA soccer fans, and you know, on a humongous screen. And it was cool. It was a really, really fun experience. And, you know, she had her Alex Morgan jersey on, and she was in her element. She was having a great time. I think she cheered louder at that sports book in the Mirage than she ever has at a Magic game. So she was pretty excited.
And you mentioned Alex Morgan, who obviously is a star with Team USA. It appears that you have an Alex and a star of your own. Your daughter, Alex, you posted a picture the other day of her posing with the soccer ball. And I think the comment you made was something along the lines of Stone Cold. But Alex Morgan, world-class with Team USA. What's in the future for your Alex Salerno in the soccer world?
Boy, I don't know. And, you know, the funny thing is, Scott, with that picture, she had no idea I was taking that. Like, she wasn't even – it kind of looks like she was looking at me, but she was kind of just staring off into the zone. And she has done extremely well playing soccer this year. She had 2 goals again the other night, and she's just an incredible athlete. She really is. I don't know what sport she's going to play or what she's going to choose to do, but I think she's going to do very well at whatever she chooses. And she actually starts gymnastics camp this Monday, this coming week, so she's kind of jacked up about that. But yeah, I don't know. Soccer right now, she's having a great time with it, and that's all that really matters. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, you mentioned she's an athlete, and I know that Cam, no slouch himself with hockey and with baseball and whatever else he decides to put his attention into. But Come on, coach. They got the great DNA. Darcy, the soccer player, you, the basketball player. And speaking of, did I see a way back throwback picture of you back in your basketball playing days, coach, on your Instagram, maybe?
Yeah, how about that, huh? How about that picture? That one's never made it to social media. But it was actually a young basketball player who asked me that question on Instagram, a player who's attended our youth camps and actually plays for the Moncton Hawks, does some provincial stuff. And I thought he'd kind of get a kick out of that. So I swallowed my pride and I posted that. And yeah, that was from Montpelier High School. I think I was probably 16 or 17 years old, in that photo, playing for the Solons, right? So I don't know, I thought people would kind of get a kick out of it. I certainly got some comments from some friends and former players about that photo, but I thought it was all in good fun.
Well, I had to look at it two, three, four times and going, is that coach? Fop, driving to the basket right there.
Yeah, that was a bucket. I guarantee that, Scott. That was a bucket. I mean, I was a point guard. I was definitely kind of a coach on the floor, believe it or not. I don't know, I was a pretty good shooter, and I don't know. I mean, I was a pretty good player for the state of Vermont standards, which isn't exactly a hotbed of basketball. But I held my own. I held my own.
A young Joe Salerno. Listen, that was on your Instagram story, and those go away after 24 hours. So maybe we could encourage you to post it on your regular Instagram feed so it's there more permanently for all of us to enjoy the splendor of the young Joe Salerno in his Vermont days.
That was posted on my story for a reason. It goes away, right? And yeah, no, I think that will just stay in my phone, and I'll only pull it out on certain occasions.
Well, listen, coach, we appreciate you taking time as always. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you and to catch up, not only on the work side, the basketball side of things with the Moncton Magic, but also with what's going on with your fantastic, wonderful family as well. Thanks for this, and we'll catch up again in the next week or so and see where things are then.
Yeah, no, that sounds great, Scott. I look forward to it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks very much, Coach. Enjoy the rest of your day and say hi to the family.
All right, take care.
That is Coach Joe Salerno of the Moncton Magic. Great to catch up with Coach. He's a busy man. I joke with him before. I said he should get a map and be like, where's Waldo? And kind of put little pins all over the map, all the different places that he's traveling. And if you would like to become a part of Magic Time and be a sponsor of the program and advertise on this very popular podcast, you can certainly get a hold of me. You can reach out to me on my Twitter account, Scott_FFM. I'd love to have you part of the podcast as a sponsor and an advertiser. Just get a hold of me and let me know. Again, big thanks to Joe Salerno, and thank you to you for tuning in to the podcast today. Till next time, friends, enjoy the rest of your day. And remember, if you can't take part in sport, be a good one anyway. Bye for now.